And now back to the morning show.
Gunged back in at 8:43 on this July the 15th. I'm Marcia Meekumber, your host here until 10 o'clock this morning on every Monday, as well as this very one that we have today. And we're going to talk a little bit more about local housing, local politics, all those things that go on, because our next guest is Susan Kirsch, the founder and CEO of Catalyst for Local Control, a state watchdog group, pardon me. Catalyst for Local Control is a great grassroots. Boy, I'm just struggling to get the words out this morning. It's a grassroots network of community leaders. It includes both volunteers and elected officials, but they are dedicated to promoting affordable housing while preserving single-family zoning. They are still finding the environment very important to support, and reliable infrastructure is very important as well. They have guests who come in to speak with them and to discuss actions from all across the state. And you too can get in on this with every 5 p.m. Monday Zoom call where they gather together to update on developments and hear speakers and all that kind of thing, all that kind of stuff, all organized by Susan Kirsch. Good morning, Susan. It's great to have you with us.
Good morning, Marcia. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, happy midsummer-ish. Yes. Middle of July here, our temperatures are finally down a little bit. Hopefully that means tempers on various issues have cooled at least a little bit, because people are a little bit more comfortable at these temperatures.
And speaking of lowering temperatures, part of that's easier now in legislative affairs because all of the legislators are back home. They're not sweltering in Sacramento as they were. You know what, they left on the 4th of July weekend, and so they are gone until August 5th. And so some of the intensity of what happens in Sacramento is no longer simmering so much as it was there for a while.
Yay. This is a good thing. But it also means it's probably easier to reach out to your local representatives when they're locally back home in their district, and people can connect with them that way. And it also means it's a great time to plan and strategize and review what's been done or what's coming up on the docket.
Yeah. And I want to say how much I appreciate your formatting, having Fred on talking about the very specific local issues, and how much what's happening locally for any of our communities is always so important that people have to be paying attention at the local level to understand the magnitude of what is happening, you know, in communities or what's happening for constituents. And I find many of us these days in Catalyst are thinking more about how it used to be that they were communities, neighborhoods fighting against projects that came in like down the street or around the corner that they were aware of. And many of us have come to see now that the trend is no longer that the fight is with developers, little developers. Our fight now is against the state legislators who have been co-opted by the investors in housing and see so much money to be made in being able to build with a kind of disregard for what a community really needs, for the low-income wage earners that Fred's so good about bringing up. Those are the people who really need housing, and that more and more our state legislators are catering to developers and giving them the rights to decide how much housing will be built, which is moderate or above moderate rate housing, because that's where they get the greatest return on investment.
That's right.
And so, you know, just to give a couple of examples of how that's happened over the last month and some of the things that Catalysts, that we're all paying attention to, because when the legislators come back August 5th, many of these bills, I think in the beginning of 2014, they introduced 215 housing bills alone. So some of those have been winnowed down, but there's a whole lot of bills that'll still come forward. But all of those bills are now out of the policy deliberations, and they'll be coming before the Appropriations Committee. So in appropriations, they're looking to ask, does the state have the money to fund this measure? And the state, you know, is like $20 billion with a deficit. So we'll be encouraging Catalyst to be writing letters to the Appropriations Department saying, like, you don't have the money. And you've not shown us results from what you've been doing up to this point. So you should not approve more bills, continuing what has been a bad trend in the first place.
Right.
So the state sometimes comes back to say, well, we don't have to fund it. Your listeners have probably heard that expression. These are unfunded mandates to the state, or from the state to the jurisdictions, the communities, the cities or the counties. And so this is where cities, jurisdictions are coming under so much pressure, as all of these bills, like the 215, let's say 100 of those bills will be passed. The staff time and the requirements that are falling down onto the shoulders of city staff are just enormous. And over the last, 10 years, we've had legislators irresponsibly saying it's up to the cities to find out how they'll get the money, because they can tax more or increase rates and fees. So there's a terrible kind of squeezing on the people, of those people who are least able to stand up and defend themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to give two examples of that, one, I'll give one assembly bill. I know it's hard to keep track of all the numbers, and it doesn't really matter that this one is 1893, Assembly Bill 1893, written by Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks, who's in the Oakland area. But interestingly, it was co-sponsored by our own Attorney General, Rob Bonta, which to me is a part of how it's just troublesome to think that the Attorney General would be helping to write the laws, that it would be the Attorney General's office, I would assume, has some of the responsibility to oversee the rightful regulation of these laws. So where does anybody have to go for due process if they don't like a law? But anyway, just this law, in brief, it's around the housing element. It's around also housing accountability. But it started as a law that was going to require the developers to have to build at least 20% of the units in a big project, 20% to be affordable. And in this bill, it allows that number to drop to 10%. So by own doings, they're undermining what is the real need that most communities talk about and all of us are facing, as we understand how more and more people are dropping into homelessness because there's not low-income housing. So it's a law that, just from many perspectives, doesn't make much sense, and still it has the support of the Attorney General. So that's one example. I want to just bring forward one of the other things that Catalyst worked on in this last month, which is also indicative of the way in which the power behind the curtain is pulling a lot of strings. So let me just see if I can describe how this story unfolds. There's a bill called Senate Bill 7 that was written by Catherine Blakespear. And initially, it was introduced as a bill that was going to be addressing low-income housing for the very low housing needs. And it passed in the Senate back, I think, in January by a 52-0 vote. It just sailed through. No opposition. But on June 10th, it came to my attention that Blakespear had swept out all of the language of the bill that the Senate had approved and replaced it with a new title, making this a bill now about RENA, the Regional Housing Need Allocation, making this a bill about the RENA determination process, sweeping out all of the information that was about low-income housing and replacing it with all new content. So that was on June 18th, when the bill was drastically changed. No, I don't have that quite right. That was a little bit earlier because it was on June 19th when this bill went then to the Housing and Community Development Committee. And it was, you know, the staff report, which is intended to guide the legislators on how to vote on a bill that they probably rarely have time to read, reported that there were no letters of either support or opposition to this bill. And for anybody who's paying attention, we know how RENA is so controversial, you know, because in the sixth cycle, most communities' numbers doubled or more. So here it was, a new bill before the Senate Housing Committee, where there were no letters, either support or opposition. Well, that's because, obviously, it came up in less than a week's time. But it passed. It passed anyway in Housing and Community Development. And then just 1 week later, it was pushed forward to go into the local government committee hearing. And at least this time, they had been able to garner three letters of support. There was one individual who was a part of the Catalyst effort who had his letter in and acknowledged and listed as a part of the opposition. And many of the rest of us, Catalyst included, Livable California, United Neighbors, who we all submitted letters but apparently missed like the 5 p.m. deadline. So none of our letters were recorded or reported. And so again, in this second committee then, it passed. It was a 7 and then 3 no votes, but it passed. So this is one of those bills that will now come back to go to a floor, or first go to appropriations and then go to a floor vote. So the kind of maneuvering and intentionality which is keeping the public uninformed and even giving those agencies like the League of California Cities, that cities and jurisdictions pay a lot of money into that agency to represent them, did not have any time. Their letter on file on their website was the letter from, I don't know, like April or something, because they hadn't seen the new letter. So neither individuals, neighborhood, local groups like Catalyst or Cali, some of the other groups, mm-hmm. have any time to do this. And the bills are being passed without even being read, and without time for the staff analysts to do much more but than parrot whatever information they're fed. And one of the things in this bill, Senate Bill 7, that was parroted is that they were calling this just a minor bill. It was they were making technical changes and minor improvements. But to read more deeply into the bill, one of the things that this bill does is to deny due process to cities, that if there is a decision about their RENA numbers, they have no due process.
Ah. Insanity.
Really, I'm proud to say that we used one of our Catalyst call nights then just to call. We had the list of the phone numbers of the local government committee. You know, there were, 11 of them or so. We had the committee names and numbers. We had a short script. We had some bullet points that we enabled people just on our hour-long call to make, you know, as many calls as our group could get done during that time. We sent out the information to the other partner groups, to our coalition of mm-hmm. elected officials and California Cities for Local Control. So we were able to get word out to other entities, but it was like the cover email was saying, like, the vote is tomorrow. Can you organize anybody to make calls yet tonight? Because that's how little wow. time was given.
Wow.
And the frightening thing is that this is, you know, of course, some of the bills probably pass with real discernment and thoughtful discrimination around what it might do to support real affordable housing. But more often than not, we're getting this kind of manipulation right. of content and yeah. process. And so, and one of my colleagues was saying in a conversation with his legislator, the legislator was saying, you know, he doesn't have time for constituents. He is under so much pressure in Sacramento, like, to do the biding of the people in power, that if they want to keep like just in good standing and get the committee appointments that they want, or if they want to be able to, you know, just be held without being shunned by colleagues, they themselves are under great pressure, and their allegiance is to their peer group in Sacramento more than it is to constituents.
That's so sad. So, Susan, we've only got about a minute and a half. What would you like to make sure listeners know about in that time?
Well, the first thing is to know that on the November election, there will be a bill called the BAFA, the Bay Area Housing Authority, that people in Sonoma, it's a 9-county Bay Area bill, vote no on that bill. The subtitle that we call it is it's 20 billion reasons to vote no. It's a $20 billion bond measure that by the time they pay the interest on it over 50 years will be a $50 billion obligation for any property owner, which translates into any renter, because all of these costs will be passed along. So start talking to people, do the research on BAFA to vote no on that. Catalyst is working on a town hall. I just will mention one other thing. It's going to be a 3-part town hall, at least, maybe more, that starts in August. And our first event will be on how density, state-required density, is leading to increased fire risk for both property and life, right, which is leading to insurance failure, collapse, or withdrawal. Right. State Farm just got approval of raising their rates by 30%. And it all tracks back to the push for more density, which is in air.
Yeah. We've been talking with Susan Kirsch, founder and CEO of Catalyst for Local Control. You can find them at catalystsca.org. And today's the day to go check it out, because